Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we've got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Ryan Pills,
and Katie Pills
in the house.
This is kind of weird. There's no like interns or sidekicks or journeymans or Jonah. Jonah counts. I got the full-time crew here, and by full-time I mean we spend way too much time playing games together and don't actually make any money.
Or not enough.
Both things. But we are looking forward to hanging out tonight, talking about some games that we've been playing recently. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about some of our favorite ever gateway games.
Yes.
Yes. We're also going to be interviewing Patrick Marino from The Op, talking about some of the games that they are working on over there. And as always, we'll have a bunch of Kickstarters to talk about. I don't know that there's any secret after the show stuff. This is like a slow week. There's no Mighty Ducks. We talked about that one.
But this week, as we're recording, Loki is coming.
Oh, it's
Wednesday.
Coming back.
So next podcast, we'll do spoilers at the end.
All right, Ryan, I expect you to come with a full arsenal of behind the scenes and secret pieces of knowledge.
I don't know if I'll have watched it by then.
Maybe. We'll have all the Easter eggs.
Perfect. In 2 weeks, you won't have watched anything?
I don't know, maybe.
We will. We're going to watch
pressure's
it.
Pressure's on.
Thursday morning, if we have to.
At 8 a.m.
Yeah, before Ryan goes to work.
At 6 a.m. We've been having a lot of fun this week. One of the games that actually just made it to our table. Let's just start off right at
Let's
the trailhead
it.
Talking about.
Ooh, at the trailhead. I like that.
Yeah, I would never say that in real speech, but it seemed like a great transition. Trails.
Happy Trails.
Coming to us from Keymaster Games. Not only did they just get a brand new logo, which is schnazzy. I kind of like their old one better myself, but
I'd like the new one.
It looks sharp.
I mean, you got the K still with Keymaster with a key, so I like what they did.
I do. I feel like it's probably broader and more appreciable.
I think it's maybe what I would refer to as more classic or something.
Classic. It's got the like broad appeal for sure. The cool Viking thing was pretty great, but I'm okay with it.
The name of the game, I don't know if we were really specific. The name of the game is Trails.
Trails.
Which is in the Keymaster Parks line. I think it even says on the box there, a Parks game. Is that what it says there,
yep,
Katie?
A Parks game.
From the 59 Park series.
Mm-hmm.
So featuring the same great artwork as Parks.
But actually completely different. There is
featuring
no
the same
reused
great style
yes,
of artwork.
No reused artwork.
Yes, these are all brand new pieces
that's
of
right.
art.
That's cool. That's cool. And it is an exclusive to Target. So you're going to have to go to Target to check it out. I would say the box size is like half the size of Codenames. Does that sound about right?
About half the size of a Parks box. Sure.
Sure. There we go.
Yeah. It's pretty small.
And there's other details about it.
It's for 2 to 4 players. And it is a standalone game. It's not an expansion.
Right.
It is its own game, but in the Parks kind of universe.
Parks and it, cinematic universe.
Yes.
Ooh, yes.
It says 20 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
We played in 40 minutes.
We did 4 players. There's probably, I would
4
say,
4 players, and it was our first time
it
playing.
It has 10 minutes a player. We were making sure we got some of the rules right,
right.
or wrong.
Kevin and I crushed it.
I mean, there are some things that
granted.
We did with that were amazing.
Yes.
But then we figured out that one of the cards we were using to get lots of other cards, we were playing incorrectly.
Totally wrong.
Accidental cheating.
Melissa and I were like way
I'm
behind
like, here's the thing.
In points, and we didn't have those really awesome cards that somehow gave us all sorts of free stuff.
Super.
Like Kevin
was,
and
no,
Will
here's
had.
Here, let me just be honest. At the beginning, I was not using those cards, and Will's like, look at this card I'm using. I'm like, oh, I think I had one of those cards in my deck I had already scored. I was like, I guess I'm going to use that for the rest of the game, which did then give me a lot of more cards. So
I'm
so
okay with influencing other people to cheat.
That's what I'm saying.
Will led you astray
Will,
into the cheating ways.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I should not have been led astray.
The card
so
said
Will
on
and
it.
Kevin crushed us,
yes.
But we're going to put an asterisk by that win.
I'm going to say, let's see, my score probably would have been closer in the 30s And Melissa, you had?
I had 34.
I think Melissa probably would have won.
Yeah.
It's too hard for me. I had 69.
I had
but
33.
69? Yeah, you were in the 30s.
Yeah. The card said on it, every card you buy that has this symbol on it is one cheaper per symbol that you have.
But I think if you reread it, it said this card.
But it actually meant this one card that you buy.
It's cheaper. Yeah. So Will was like, I get this one for free, and I get this one free.
This is so great.
We got the general flow is good. It does feel a little bit like Parks. You're going from tile to tile and collecting resources and things like that. So I would say it has that same vibe to it. Mm-hmm. A lot simpler.
Yep.
And I would say even a little bit faster, as you can sort of see the game and like you can sort of see the game progression as the sun moves down the trail.
Yep.
It's kind of like that.
Right. So you're following the same like tile trail that you do in maps in Parks. But in this one, every time you make it to the end of the trailhead.
The trail end.
Trailhead or trail end. The sun moves
only on
one
the trail
tile.
End.
Only the trail end.
And when it moves, it flips the tile as it moves. So the tiles actually get better throughout the course of the game. And when you get near the end of the game, you start getting tons of resources. Other rule that we broke. We didn't pay attention to the fact that there is a limit on the number of resources you could hold.
I think all of us except Will.
No,
oh, let's blame
I'm,
Will a lot.
I'm pretty sure I did that at least once because I looked down and I was like, is there a limit on how many resources?
I specifically asked.
Because I have a whole bunch.
I did say at the beginning that there was an 8 resource limit.
Well, and I think I was pushing pretty far down the trail, so I didn't like hold a lot of resources because I was skipping a lot of the tiles. Yeah. So.
But yeah, it was a great experience. I think at first it felt a little bit like when I first looked at it, I'll be honest, I thought, oh, this is just a rolling move. But as you got further into the game, like there's a bear that you can control, which is pretty great and actually is pretty strategic in where you place
bears. Yeah, Will saw my strategy.
I actually didn't. I just didn't turn my piece on.
The bear is strategic only if you're allowed to put the bear where you want to put the bear.
That's what I'm saying. If you can roll the bear symbol.
Somehow Kevin was able to roll that bear symbol a lot.
He did.
So I just kept pushing the bear like right in front of me. So I would just keep going.
On your next turn.
You got extra resources if you did that.
It was very nice.
And you're also taking photos.
Yep. Right.
Collecting photographs.
Yep. Yeah. Collecting photographs.
And then, of course, you're getting your badges, which is key to winning the game.
Correct.
Which are kind of like visiting the parks in Parks. You have to turn in certain resources to collect the badge, and then a lot of them have a special one-time bonus, or they may give you extra points for collecting certain types of badges. So there's a little bit of a set collection aspect there.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's very reminiscent of Parks. It's a little more streamlined. I think this would be easier for like general audiences to just pick up themselves with no problem, but still give you a pretty full experience of looking at cool stuff and collecting things. The badges are kind of nice. It's like more like Boy Scouty, where you're like getting actual badges.
Bird Watcher badge and, you know, like first aid badge.
I got the recycling badge.
Did you?
I was proud of myself.
Oh, good for you.
Go for it.
Oh, and I was going to say, yes, this is going to be exclusive to Target, at least initially. Coming out June 20th, I believe, is the release date, and for about $20. So,
which will be the day this, like, you hear this.
Oh, wow.
So,
go get it right now. Cool. Anybody else play anything else fun this week?
We played a few days ago, Yukatoa.
Yeah, that was neat.
And that is a game from a new company, and Darrington Press. So, it is, they have a couple games coming out. All like at once here, but this one is sit on a ship of tiles of hexagons, and you are in control with the player to your right and player to your left,
between two cities, kind of thing.
So you have colors of crew that are on the ship that look like. Scared Gumbies.
Scared Gumbies?
The little plastic minis are pretty hilarious.
Yeah. There is a dragon on one of the tiles that is moving around the ship and flailing its tail, throwing ship people off the ship.
That's why they're scared.
The crewmates. And you're trying to basically get your either the color to your left or color to your right to survive to the end. Melissa and I will say, after we played the game correctly.
We're handed it by Dan.
Dan helped us win the game.
Thanks, Journeyman Dan. Yeah. I believe that this either company or at least the game is somewhat connected to Critical Role.
That is correct.
The role-playing company, I guess, group that plays and is fairly famous for doing role-playing. I believe Yukitoa is a monster that has appeared in their games.
Oh, in the Critical Role games. Okay.
It's described as like a Leviathan in the instruction manual, but maybe it is one of their creatures.
Atoa.
Ugh.
Atoa.
Yukatoa.
It's definitely UK apostrophe Atoa.
If you want to see the artwork for it and what the game actually looks like, we just covered it on our Saturday morning board game show, which will be like a week old by now when you come to listen to this, but you can find that on our YouTube channel. We covered a bunch of games on there. That was one of them. And it was a pretty neat one as you, one of the interesting card mechanics in the game is that on your turn, you can either play a card and take the action on it, or if you have a set of cards, you can play a set of cards and then another card or another set of cards. And so by waiting a couple turns to rack up some cards, you can have a much more powerful turn in the game, which is pretty neat. I really enjoyed the artwork for it. It has a very cool aesthetic to it. Nice, very detailed drawing style, which I thought was pretty fun.
I was going to say, the game that just came in the mail that I'm super excited to try is Micro Macro.
I know!
Oh, yes.
I know you guys predicted it to be the winner of the spiel, and none of us have played it. And
it's all based on other people's
purely
knowledge.
Based on hype. But it does look kind of interesting. We were pulling out the components tonight and weren't able to get it to the table, but hopefully soon.
Right, and we were trying not to peek too much because the first page is like this warning. Don't
look at anything.
That was only Will trying not to peek too much.
Right.
Because you're saying the rest of us weren't tempted.
Oh,
to
that's
peek,
what I was
not
saying.
That we
None
were
of us
peeking.
Were looking through it.
Right.
Will
right.
was the one tempted. That was like, I don't know,
like,
this whole
I can't
thing
put it down. It does look very cool. It looks unique, which I think is one of the nice things. Whenever you can bring something unique to the table that doesn't already exist in 30 other iterations, you've got a couple steps ahead. So be looking forward to trying that one out. One game that Sarah and I got to play, I think maybe you guys played it as well, was Brew. Have we talked about that on the podcast?
I think Ryan played, I think we talked about it, yeah.
Did we? From Pandasaurus, it's a dice worker placement game, as well as...
Yeah, we talked about it.
Set collection and all that good stuff. Yep, that was a fun one. Made that one out to the table yet again this week with some friends, and they did great. It was fun. It was a good game.
Cool. Well, we should jump into our Kickstarter Conniption.
Kickstarter Conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about five different campaigns coming to Kickstarter during the month of June. Kevin, start us off.
Start us off from Breaking Games, who's bringing a game called Chroma to Kickstarter. This is a game for 2 to 3 players, takes about 10 to 20 minutes. And this is a game where that combines Blockus, that tile laying game with those translucent tiles, with Lightbright.
What? Light bright?
Sort of light bright. You're not actually...
Yes,
like,
you totally are.
But you're not punching things through paper.
That's true. But you are placing these translucent tiles onto a board.
It's like build your own light bright because I didn't always use
right,
the papers.
The
I made my own stuff.
That's right. So you're taking these triangular more tiles over top of other ones with primary colors making secondary colors. And it is a triangle board, and you're basically trying to get the biggest territory of the color that you are trying to get. So if, like, red and yellow make orange, and your secondary color is orange, and you're trying to get as many orange tiles as possible on this board. So you're trying to battle against your opponents.
Yeah, basically think a backlit board that you're putting these translucent tiles on. So it's kind of like glowing.
And so is it a 3-player game?
That's... You can go up to 3 players because there's...
you
can make
so say only 3 secondary colors.
Correct. So it's you can play 2-player where there's like it's a dummy one or something, but 3 players, mm-hmm. everyone has their own secondary that they're trying to make. So
wow. Interesting.
There is a video that I made, so you can go check it out on YouTube. Melissa, what do you have?
On June 22nd, Van Ryder Games is bringing their next installment of graphic novel adventures. These are the books that are basically kind of like choose your own adventures. They kind of feel like, well, graphic novels with storylines and plots. My favorites are the Sherlock Holmes ones because I like the mystery. information is just starting to come out. I'm not sure. There might be a Sherlock Holmes one in this set. They've teased Space Brigade, where you're managing a crew in space, but there are space raptors that you're having to battle or hide from or something. Who knows? You'll have to find out. But these are usually solo games where you're going through a book, you're making decisions, turning to different pages, and some of them are much more complex, some of them are simpler. I've enjoyed most of the ones I've played. There are, I think, at least three other sets already of books. So definitely check out the graphic novel adventures to get more information on the individual books that will be in this set and which ones might appeal to you. Ryan.
Coming June 15th is First Ascent. This is by designer Kate Ott. And we actually have an overview video of this that you'll be able to watch. It is pretty cool. They asked us to send this on to other folks to get more, awareness, content created around it. And I'm a little sad that we're having to send it on because it was a very good game. Basically
enjoyed it. It's all about
space
mountain climbing.
Oh, mountain.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mountain climbing.
There's a lot of mountain climbing lingo that you get to learn.
That is true. There's all sorts of moves, positions, handholds, equipment, things that I've never heard of.
But it's not important for the gameplay. The basic game, but
what Katie said is
you
not
get to
important.
Learn all this lingo. That's what it's but the basic
you don't have
gameplay
to know any of that to actually play.
These peaks that you're climbing, there's these hexagonal tiles that are going up the peak. So I think there's like six rows of them, and you start off on the base row and gradually work your way up, and you are trying to accomplish some personal objectives. And also get points from these shared objectives. Yeah. So you might go up and then traverse, where you go to the side, and maybe descend and then go back up.
So the tiles have like different resource costs, and they each have like different things that are needed for these goals. And
yeah,
the tiles
so as you're
places.
Ascending, you have to pay the requirement on each tile. Mm-hmm. So you might. There's four types of cards. There's three different skills. I think it's crack, slab, and face skills. I might be wrong on that. But it's different types of bouldering skills that you'll need. And then you'll be using different gear cards. And each one may or may not have a technique that's tied in with it. And then you also have like a water meter and a psych meter. So if something's really hard, it'll require some of your psych to be drained. Or, if something's tiring, it might require you to use more water, that sort of thing. So you have to pay your way up the mountain. And at the end of each turn, you can either draw three cards if you climbed or draw four cards and or replenish your psych and water, four different units of that. So you have to weigh, should I rest or should I climb? If you climb, you also have to face a climbing card challenge. And if you don't have the things to meet that, you get in trouble and you end up having to draw fewer cards. And sometimes you end up passing all of your cards to your wife because you just keep getting bad climbing cards. And she ends up winning by a lot. It was a fun game. And there's more to it than
there's asymmetrical
what we just said,
abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. You play as different climbers.
But I recommend that you check it out June 15th. Will, what do you got?
I'm looking at the game Scarface 1920 from Red Zen Games. This is a Red Zen Games. This is a 1-4 player. It describes itself as a worker placement and deck builder game. It looks like an area control game. So it'll be interesting to see how the worker placement ties in with what appears to be area control. The game features a bunch of components. You've got minis, you've got cards, you've got money, you've got a giant map board that you're trying to put your pieces onto. There are also, it looks like, little tiny gun tokens, which I'm assuming don't fit into the hands of the minis, but probably stack on the spaces to show the amount of firepower you have in your space. says that the gameplay takes about an hour to 2 hours. The artist for it is Antonio Chaparins, and the art style is pretty sharp. I really enjoy the look of the style that they went with in the game. A little bit of fun illustration, just big and bold, and looks pretty neat. There's not a whole lot of information out about the game, but from what I can tell, it looks like it's a pretty complete package. They've already got just a million molds, it looks like, for the different minis, and all the pieces for it look pretty sharp. So if you're interested in Mafia-type games where you're battling for control and to have the biggest gang and to do all kinds of illegal activities on the black market, then Scarface 1920 is worth checking out. All right, Sarah, what are you looking at?
Coming June 8th is a new series called Quirks from XYZ Game Labs. And this is a set of three pocket-sized games that they are launching all on one Kickstarter campaign. One of the games is called Cultivate. And this is a set collection card game where you have plants that you are placing into your garden. And you will be strategically overlapping the cards to try and get plants next to one another that have matching traits of how they grow. So more sun or more water, or if there are bugs that are attracted to them. So there's different plants in there, and everyone has endgame goals that are secret. So you also have some little trinkets that you can add. So you can use a watering can to plant extra plants, or put spiders out so that they eat all the bugs. The bugs are worth negative points, so you're trying to make the best grouping of plants in your garden. So that's the first one.
You forgot to mention the handy garden gnomes.
Yes, there are garden gnomes as well that allow you to transplant your plants around in your garden.
I think the best part of the game.
And then the next game is called Zoo Year's Eve. And in this game, it's a small deck of cards, and it all is animals from the zoo. They are going to the New Year's Eve party, and they're all just trying to get into the door. So certain animals, like penguins, they're already dressed up in a tux, so they can walk right in. But other animals, like the elephant, can't come to the party, because nobody wants to be the elephant in the room. So you will have to bluff your way through trying to get all of the animals in your hand into the party. So on your turn, you just lay a card and you
face down
and you announce what it is, supposedly. And other players around the table can decide if they think you're bluffing or not. And it's just the first player to get rid of their cards wins. So it's a very quick 15-minute max filler game. Yeah. And then
it boils down that bluffing mechanic to like one simple tiny deck of cards, and does it pretty well.
Mm-hmm. The other game is called Bait and Switch, and this is a two-part social deduction game for 3 to 9 players, where you are working together to build a team to go complete a heist mission. And you don't really know who's going to be on which team. You have a card that has both of the team colors, red and blue. And then with that color, it also has a role that you will play in the job on the heist. So it might have a brawler or a hacker or an insider. So you might have a blue brawler on your card and a red insider. And there will be 3 jobs that you will need to have fulfilled for your mission to gain some extra points. And then you'll just talk amongst yourselves at the table, trying to persuade people to be on your team, or maybe you don't want them to be on your team. And you'll work that out. You'll secretly select one of those roles on your card. Everyone will reveal, and you'll see which team everybody actually selected. And then from that, you'll move on to the next section of the game, where you will do kind of a version of Prisoner's Dilemma of the points that your team earned based on how well they completed the mission is up for grabs. And you can either be friendly and share it, or you can not be friendly and try and take it all for yourself. And then the goal of the game is to, there's four different types of heists. You can steal jewelry or tech or just briefcase of stuff. And once you get all four of those different types of heists completed, the first player or the player to have the most points but not go over 35 wins. So you might get to the end and gain a ton of points and be able to fulfill them all, but then you've become not so secretive and the cops are after you, so you end up losing. So you'll have to be strategic on how many points you try to earn, but still try and complete all the heists.
Yeah, you may have to actually avoid being on the right team at some point so you don't go over the points. One of the nice things is that the person who gains the fourth or whatever the final token is, that final reward, gets to decide, do they want five more points, which will probably give them the victory, or do they want five negative points, which may also still give them the victory because it'll help to avoid going over the final, the too high of a score.
Yep. So that is the season one of the Quirks series coming from XYZ Game Labs. They'll have a little box. These are all pocket-sized games, all on the same Kickstarter campaign, coming June 8th.
We're going to jump into our house guest segment with Pat from The Op. Welcome to the show.
Hey!
Thanks for having me on.
Pat, you're the... Once again, I just completely lost my train of thought. You are...
What is your title?
Title is...
Game Design Manager.
Game Design Manager. So you get to design all the games.
All of them.
I do share with a team. Sometimes I wish I could do them all, but I'm only one person. We're lucky. We have a team of two other designers plus the like playtest coordinator.
Very cool. How long have you been with The Op?
I just passed my 4-year mark at The Op, and I was doing some games on my own before that for a while.
Congratulations. Well, we have you on the show to talk about some of these games that have recently hit the market from The Op. Why don't we start with Quest of Yore?
Yeah, so Quest of Yore I almost feel like getting to backers, even though it wasn't a Kickstarter, because we had so many pre-orders and things going with it. But people are getting their hands on it now for the first time. And it's been exciting for us. This game has been in development and in the works for a very long time now. And a lot of work directly with Pixar and with the film team to get the vibe and everything from Onward as instilled into the gameplay as we can.
Because this is coming right from the hit movie Onward. This is great.
Yeah, and it was kind of a fun thing when they asked us to take this artifact, right, this game that Barley has on screen, and they said, we have some rough ideas of what it is, but not how it plays or how it functions or what that all means. So they asked us to fill in those blanks and put this on the table in real life. And it sort of gets to be this artifact rather than playing Ian and Barley's story from the film. It's Barley loaned you a game straight out of the screen and said, here, take this and play it. And that was a really fun way to design an IP-based game, but with a totally new story.
Oh, I love it. It's so cool. And you guys did a really fantastic job. I don't know where all the ideas came from and who contributed what, but I love the fact that when you open up the game, like it's the game, and then it's his copy of it with all of his notes and taped in additional pieces and sketches throughout.
He just likes the graphic design part
of it. I do. I love it. It's brilliant. Way to go, whoever put that in there. Super fun to look through. I love the water stains that are on the character sheets and everything. Like it fits really well in that universe. I think you guys really encapsulated it. I've only played through the first one or two scenarios, and I'm not a big RPG-er. I've only really played a couple other RPGs. So this is, I feel like, a perfect introduction to that whole world. And man, it's just wrapped up really well. Walk us through a little bit of the development. How many people worked together? How much was Pixar involved? Give us that picture.
Yeah. Give us the behind the scenes.
Yeah, so this was a big team effort, as you might imagine. You know, when they presented the idea to us at The Op, we sort of said, we have to do this, but we've never done an RPG as a company before. So we immediately reached out to some folks to get some support and some expertise in that area. So, you know, if you're looking through the credits, there's a lot of folks involved, but Matthew Ruther came in really early as somebody who had RPG writing experience and design experience and kind of helped us get the core system of how the game works together. And then he put together the sort of prologue chapter and the first chunk of the quests that you play through in the Tome of Quests. And then we started working with Ivan Van Norman and Jameson McDaniel, who helped add more story onto that and expand it out to the sort of 12 chapter story you have. My role was a lot more on the, like, holding the development to the purpose, right? Which was an intro RPG that hopefully folks can pick up who've never played one and understand what we're doing. So if you look at the player's guide, a lot of that language is around, you know, it's okay if you stumble a little bit with this, as long as the story moves and people have a good time, that's the priority. And I think kind of taking that, oh, I did something wrong out of it, and just making it about the experience. So
yeah, coaching them through it. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and we've had some folks in the influencer realm who are pretty excited and taking it by the reins to, you know, put together some videos on that too, to kind of give you another outlet if you're not the type of person who likes to read a big rule book of how do I learn this? And so we'll be posting a lot of those videos on the op website at theop.games. Because one of the things people may not realize is with an RPG, you can't have a BGG page. If you go over to BGG, you won't find Dungeons and Dragons. You have to go to RPG Geek, which is a separate like site for RPG stuff. So we've had a few folks already like, why is there no BGG page? It's like, well, there is, but it's RPG Geek, so you have to kind of
well go thank you for letting us know. We will.
Right,
you
just blew our minds
about that one.
I just searched for it and I was like, it's not on here. What?
Well, and also for our viewer or our listeners, you can check out Tantrum House. We'll be doing a playthrough, I believe.
I think we're doing the first scenario, not the prologue.
First scenario. We're going to do a playthrough of that, and I think that's going to be the week this podcast goes live.
Oh,
so
cool.
Amazing. You can check it out.
Now, are you
Pat, what?
Are you making your own characters for that, or are you going to use the pre-gens that are in the box?
I think we're going to use the pre-gens, but we've already played through the first scenario, so we do have a little bit of upgrading going on. But
nice.
Yeah, it'll be those. Yep, should be neat. We're looking forward to that.
Why don't we, is there anything else about Onward, or why don't we move to the next game?
Yeah, let's do it. So we've got so much stuff going on right now. Of course, our party games have been doing really well. Pews and Cues and Blank Slate and Telestrations, as a lot of people know. The op for those key games.
We were literally just talking about Hues and Cues on today's episode, Pat, because we were talking about our favorite gateway games, and Hues and Cues came up.
I think that's actually going to be talked about in the future because we haven't talked about it yet the podcast. Time travel.
I always have to share when this game comes up, one of the play tests we were doing of it, you know, you get to the part where you can give a 2-word clue for the color. And one of our internal graphic designers didn't realize that the word should be related. He just thought he could give 2 1-word clues as his 2-word clue. He thought that was kind of the objective. So he's concentrating on the board, and this was an earlier version of the board that had some slightly different color palettes to it. It had a little more of the browns. And after, you know, a long pause, he just looks up at us and says, "Gravy cornucopia." and everybody just kind of paused and went, what
is a gravy cornucopia? Funny,
that's
getting that brown in there.
Well, we have a question. Can you can we do an expansion to Hues and Cues in the future, because you get there's so much more colors you can add, right, Will?
There we were missing some. My favorite is when I play that with people who are like super literal, who think they'll like cheat the system. I can't remember what the guy's clue was, but they'll do like R2-D2, but they won't tell you like the clue is that they want you to guess R2 or whatever, and they're giving you like C-3PO, and I'm like, what yellow, gold? Like, stop cheating it. Stop trying to get me to get on the numbers. Just give me the clue that is related to the color.
That's right.
Yeah. With expansion, we have joked about like, do we need like the grayscale edition or the sepia tone board or something?
Ooh,
to really make it harder.
There it is. Grayscale board. That's interesting. No.
That's a terrible idea,
right?
Don't do that one. Oh, man. Why don't we talk about 25 Words or Less?
Yeah, so 25 Words or Less is the newest party game that we have out. And this is, as I like to say, it's based on the game show that's based on the board game.
Nice.
We've come full circle.
Wasn't this a board game a long time ago? Okay.
Yeah, it was, and it's what inspired the show that folks may have seen, or they may have played the original game. And the idea is it kind of plays like Name That Tune in a way. So There's a list of five words, and one member of each team can see that list, and they're bidding back and forth with how many one-word clues they'll need to give their team to guess all five of the words on the card. So, you know, you start off looking at it and going, well, okay, 25 words, that's five word, one-word clues per word on the card. That's not too bad. So I'm going to drop it down and bid. I'm going to put the pressure on, say, 18. You know, and the other team has to either give you that opportunity or bid lower. And when finally somebody's given the opportunity, they get the number of words listed, and what feels like a very short amount of time on a sand timer to go through and give that many one-word clues, get their team to guess all five words, or if they miss, the other team steals the point. And it's always interesting to see who in the group can really like hone in and just give that one obvious, like, if I say this, I know everyone will say the right opposite thing. Or some of those cards come up and you're like, oh, this is an abstract concept. How do I even drive this point home? And
with five words.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because a lot of times you think like, okay, if you put best friends on the same team or a couple or that kind of thing, they're going to really excel at this. And it's like sometimes and sometimes not. So it's just different.
Yeah, me and my wife cannot be on the same team. That never works. We are the worst at reading each other's minds on the one-word clues.
Cool. And is that available in stores now, Pat?
Yes, I believe that just hit retail, I want to say this past week, maybe.
Cool. Any other games you'd like to share with the audience from coming from the op or just recently released?
Or maybe a favorite that you've worked on?
There you go.
Ooh, favorite I've worked on is always a tough one.
You know, they're all his favorites. Come
right,
on, Will.
Right?
Yeah.
One of my favorites, if you want to give us secret inside stories on that, is Star Wars Dark Side Rising. The Rising games I've thoroughly enjoyed, and each time a new one comes out, I always think like, oh, it's going to be the same thing with a new skin on it, and then there's some new thing that delights me with it. That one is one of my favorites from the Rising series.
Yeah, that's always the thing when we're designing those, right, is Andrew Wolf started that that engine with Thanos Rising.
Yes.
And then kind of carried it forward into Death Eaters and Star Wars. And then I did some tail end development on those two. And then we had Batman and Plankton. And, you know, there's always a future for the brand that I can't talk about.
With
that. But the
how many futures? Is this like forever? Can we expect every IP that we love in the future? Or what's the.
we don't plan quite that far into the future.
Oh, okay.
We're just actually in, you know, I don't know how much folks realize with like the production timelines, like the 2022 line is already known and in heavy development. And the 2023 line is being decided now with some nods towards like, oh, that game will push to 2024. so we're always trying to figure that out. And of course, part of that is always looking at all of the brands we work with, the Hasbro brands and Munchkin and Smash Up and everything else and figuring, you know, are we going to activate on any of these and what's the right IP? And then we look at the other side of what are the IPs we're working with and what can we do for those and what are our new partners going to be and all that fun stuff.
That's cool.
I like the Death Eaters Rising. I don't think Will mentioned that one.
I'm sorry. Kevin is the Harry Potter fan for sure.
Yeah, and that of course has been a great line for us as all the Harry Potter products with the Hogwarts Battle series and Charms and Potions being the most recent expansion to that has been doing really well. And it's always fun to see because when Cammy in particular works on development of those and any of us are doing a co-op game, we get into mean mode really fast. Because as the designer, right, you're sort of the embodiment of the game that's fighting against all the players who will ever play it. And so we always like, oh, you guys won too easy. I'm going to make the villains meaner. I'm going to make this thing harder. I'm going to ramp this up. And then we sometimes have to do this gut check thing where those of us who've maybe played Hogwarts Battle many, many, many times in playtesting can figure out that pattern and sort of solve a good strategy to beat the harder challenges. And then we'll give it to people who maybe haven't played in a really long time or they've never played. And they look at us like we're insane. Like, oh, we lost on like turn four. And we're like, oh, dial it back. Dial it back.
Yeah, that would have to be a challenge, I'm sure. So I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have a favorite? Let's talk about one more as we wrap up our session. What's your favorite one out there?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. Like I certainly have a place in my heart for A Court of the Dead, because that was the first game I did at the op, and the first really published game I had come out. But I will say we have one coming next year that kind of might take that special spot, because it's a co-design with my brother. So that's cool.
We'll have to have you on next year when you can talk about it.
Right? Yeah. There's so many things in it. It's hard. As I said, like we're mentally during the workday in 22 and 23. And I'm like, I really wish I could show you guys some of that stuff, but there's some really cool stuff coming later this year. You know, as we expand out some of our other lines that we have with some new product, and that's pretty much all I can say with regard to that. And we have some new stuff that I think will surprise people, that sort of some new game engines and stuff coming. So, we're always looking to innovate, expand and explore more stuff. So, hopefully stay tuned and follow us on all of our op social media, and you'll see some good announcements there in the near future.
Cool. Excellent. We will always be doing that, and we love featuring new stuff. So whenever you have some top secret new news stuff to drop us, we'd love to put it onto our board game news show.
Yep.
I think that'd be a great fit for it. So, but anyway, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for giving us the lowdown on some great things. That was really cool learning a little bit more about Onward, and I know we're looking forward to playing that one live this coming week. So we'll have to let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please do.
And thanks so much for being with us on the show.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Bye.
Very cool getting to learn a little bit more about some of the games that are coming to the op and how they came to be in the first place. Really fun hanging out with Patrick for the afternoon. I think we're going to wrap up this show we still got a little bit to go, by talking about some of our favorite gateway games. Now, that's kind of the title subject for this episode. We haven't defined exactly how we're going to run through this. Is this the gateway game that got us into the hobby? Is this our new favorite gateway game that we enjoy? Is this the gateway game that we like teaching people? What are we talking about, Kevin?
I was going to pick my top three favorite gateway
games. Top three? Oh, wait a minute. What just happened?
What?
I expected Melissa to have honorable mentions, but...
Well, Kevin and I did put together a whole top 10 video of gateway games.
That was more than 10.
Which actually ended up being more than 20, because we did a traditional gateway game and then a game that was even easier than that.
That
kind of was similar.
Whoa.
And that was almost a year ago, Melissa, that we did that video.
Wow.
Time flies.
So you can definitely watch that to get more ideas for gateway games. I mean, what does gateway game mean to you?
Oh, man.
Ooh, now we're getting deep.
Right. Let's define the term. Ryan, define for us gateway game.
I believe it's a game that helps a non-gamer get into the hobby.
Addicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say that just because people play gateway games, that doesn't mean that they're not gamers. Like, you gamers still can play gateway games. It's not something that you have to leave behind as you continue into
the
hobby.
I totally agree, but there's got to be...
Lucky.
I mean, I know people are trying to redefine what that, or redo a new term, but I mean, gateway, people understand what that usually means, because it's introducing you to the hobby of board games, and call them introductory games or something, but even that can have some connotation. So gateway games is easy to understand.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's something that's welcoming to people, not too complex.
Welcoming games.
So... But yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there in case someone's the games you mentioned are the games that I play.
I still enjoy playing these games that I'm about to talk about.
Me too.
Right, and I think my definition of a gateway game is something that not just introduces them, but really does like whet their appetite for it. Where it's like, oh, what? I've never experienced this type of thing before. What's next? And I think if there's not the what's next question, I think there is like introductory and then... I don't know. I feel like introductory and gateway are different, because gateway is the one that, like, I have to try another game like this immediately. What games are those? Kevin, you got the full list. Start us off with yours. What's your number three gateway
number three
game?
I would probably say Codenames, because I...
Oh, Kevin. I was going to say Codenames. Kevin should go last, since he has a long list.
Okay. Yes, we'll go last.
Katie, why is Codenames on your list?
Why is it...
Codenames is on my list because you can play a bunch of people. There are so few rules. I mean, you can just explain it as you go.
I like that it's good for extroverts and introverts because you can be on a team and you can like really try and be like, oh, I have, you know, guess the answers. Or you can just be like more observing on the team. So
yeah,
it has,
you can observe or just like throw out something here and there occasionally.
So I like that it's team based, but it's still competitive. So it's team versus team. So code names for the win.
Yep. I agree with that one.
Ryan, we're going to switch to Ryan now.
Sure. I don't know if this is the bottom of my list, but
the bottom of your
this
three?
Is one of the easiest is Augustus or Rise of Augustus.
Oh, man. That it's was like, another one I was going to do.
You've played bingo. Now, what if it was fun?
Or, I like that definition.
You know, what if you had some actual
goals.
Strategy involved in playing it?
Now, is Rise of Augustus still available to purchase?
I'm not sure.
I think it's been
And it's been reimagined.
Re-implemented as Via Magica. Which is a similar mechanic, but a completely different art style and theme.
And I would even say, to me, the theme brings more like a theme.
A feel to it.
With Via Magica.
Via Magica, yeah.
Yeah. But simple, easy, very approachable, but it does introduce some of the heavier mechanics, although without being heavy itself, with the strategy, like a heavier strategy in it, and lots of goals and working towards different goals. Which goal will I work towards as you kind of plot your course through the game?
So we stole Codenames and Augustus. So what's your third one, Katie?
Well, I don't know. I hadn't thought of a third one. Those were the two I was like, these are the two I'm going to talk about.
Sarah's got one.
I have two, actually, and both for the same reason, but for different
reasons.
The same audience.
Oh, different reasons.
I think games, like Ryan said, where it's something familiar, like bingo, but takes it just a step further so it's not overwhelming. I think Dragon Castle is one that does that. It's Mahjong.
Yeah.
It's just straight up Mahjong. But then when you take the tiles, instead of just setting the sets aside, you're placing them on your own board. Super easy rules. But gamer people can play it as well. That it's not something that's so simple that it is not accessible to the rest of the board gaming industry. It's not something I would enjoy playing it often. Same thing with Diamonds.
Is that your second one?
That's my second one. Diamonds.
Oh, I agree with Diamonds. That one's very familiar.
Especially an audience who grew up just playing cards all the time. Mm-hmm. That one is very accessible.
Yeah, I would say I've introduced Diamonds to a bunch of different people. I would say to me, Diamonds, the weight is more towards the older. Like if you played cards a lot growing up, I think it's cool to introduce Diamonds to the younger audience because they haven't played a lot of card games growing up because they've been playing the games that we talk about all the time. So that's kind of interesting.
So you're saying you sometimes lose the familiarity aspect
So
with
like,
people who haven't played
It's like Diamonds. Have you played Hearts? Have you played these other games? You're like, oh, I have no idea. Like there's no foundation for any. Like, have you played Rook? Have you like, nope.
I did know somebody who had in grad school who literally had like never played any games, and we tried Uno with her, and she was just spastic with like. Wait,
did she live under a rock?
I'm not sure. No, just regular Uno.
She had to be trolling you. She didn't know what the turn was.
No, she's like, oh, I'm gonna lay down now. You can't lay down now.
It's crazy.
It's
Uno
not your turn. Well, how do you know whose turn it is? Well, we're going around in a circle. Like we had to introduce the idea of taking turns in a circle to her.
Wow.
And she'd never done that, and she never got it.
That's
I don't know. It was like she was too old to learn how to play games.
So funny thing is,
us, Will.
Yeah. Here we go. I've listed this game before in my lineup of.
I'm gonna think I know Will's three, but go.
Yeah, you go ahead. I'm sure you know this one because I've talked about it before. When I'm introducing people to gateway games, I tend to want to introduce them to things that they've never seen before. So instead of saying here's bingo plus stuff, I'd rather play a game where it's like cooperative. Oh wait, what? you play together on the same team and where you're doing things that you totally don't do normally. So Hanabi is where it's at. Yep. Kevin's got the fireworks going off.
Kevin, right. Kevin's in the background doing the fireworks. I love, with his hands.
I love
like,
teaching
this is what
that game to people.
About.
I love watching their faces as they pick the card up and they, without fail, pick the card up and look at it. And then they go, oh, sorry, I forgot. We're not supposed to be looking at it. They do it every single time. Yeah. And it's funny and you laugh and it's cooperative. So everybody's able to play together and help each other. That's one of my go-tos because it feels so foreign, yet it's just a deck of cards. And I love teaching people that experience, giving them that experience.
And another one for Will is Happy Salmon.
Sure. Now, I probably wouldn't have said that one, but can't go wrong with Happy Salmon.
Oh, come on. You've taught tons of people Happy Salmon.
I have. I've stopped recently because my deck looks so rough. I feel bad pulling it out. We've played the snot.
This is our second game.
Second deck. Played the snot out of it.
And he says it's not a gateway game. Come on now,
so
folks.
Guess,
come
I
on.
Guess that's the reason.
What about Camel Up? It.
Man, no, not on my list either. But also a good game. I actually don't really consider that a gateway game. That's a super fun party game that I love.
All you're doing is like betting on camels.
See, I disagree with you about Hanabi because I feel like there is a certain level of competence required.
Mm.
And I wouldn't teach Katie's
I've
friend. I agree.
I've introduced a lot of very new gamers to it, and they've just been frustrated because they don't get it.
I think it's how you teach it.
It may also depend on age.
Also,
I've taught it to younger people.
On the level of cheating you're allowing in the game.
That's true.
Will's real fine with a good amount of cheating
first time through.
Which you'll do well if you give a lot of hints or do a lot of help, but then we try and pair
do
that.
Do you guys have King
game.
Of Tokyo?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I guess I don't have it, but I've played it a ton of times.
Oh, that's on my list.
Ryan. It's on Ryan's list?
That was one of my three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's a good one.
What else is on your
King of Tokyo.
The most recent third thing on my list would probably be Hues and Cues.
Oh.
We've been playing that a ton with people.
What
because
was your second one?
You made it be Happy Salmon. I don't know.
I didn't make it be anything.
We talked about it. Hues and Cues is one that is fun to pull out. It's very easy to explain. It has a lot of the same things going on that Codenames does where you're given a one-word clue. For whatever reason, people just really seem to enjoy like the scale of the board, the
colors,
the laughing and the going back and forth. And it's simple, like there's no hard rules to it at all, but it's very different from your normal party game. So
what was your number two?
Number two, I'll come back to me on that one.
Would you do your Cthulhu game, your party game, or is that too just party game? I don't know.
I do play it a lot, and
I don't know if it's a gateway game.
Right. It is a little tough to teach.
Right.
But it's a great game still.
I'm going to throw out another one. Ryan was telling me like, oh, why don't you do this one? It makes total sense. Number nine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one's a lot of fun with the polyominoes and trying to stack them up with the so that one's like really low drama. It's like it's close to one of those comfort game styles where it's easily approachable. There's not like a time limit and everybody just sort of like, oh, I'm just stacking my little things over here by myself, you know. And so I feel like that one's easy to teach. There's no reading. There's no passing anything. There's no, I mean, it's literally like just try to get
everybody
the most points
up the
you
same
can.
Piece at the same time.
Yeah, as I say, so there's not any confusion about anything. You just stack your stuff and try to get the best points you can.
So I'm really sad. I think number nine is out of print.
No!
At least I haven't heard of it being in print.
It is definitely out of print. And so, they definitely need to bring it back.
Yeah. So other games that kind of have that mechanic.
Last I looked, you could still buy it on Amazon, though. That was maybe a year. That was sometime in 20...
ages ago.
Sometime in 2020, I looked it up, and it was still available on Amazon.
So other games that kind of have that mechanic where you're pulling something and everyone's doing that same thing would be Karuba.
Yeah.
Is another one. A lot of Roll and Writes actually are also built on that kind of basic premise and the bingo style games.
And those tend to be pretty approachable overall.
Yeah, and they
with
tend
the exception
to be
of Hadrian's Wall.
Yes. They tend to have they tend to have simultaneous play, so there's not a lot of downtime. People can kind of keep doing things during the game.
So supposedly number 9 will be in stock in 2 more days on Amazon from Z-Man Games.
Wow.
It's back, maybe. Or someone just had a couple that they're selling.
It says the Z-Man Game Store.
Oh, interesting.
Awesome. Awesome news.
Melissa, do you have another one? I have a couple more that I'm surprised haven't come up yet.
Let's see. I mean, you have some of the classics.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Things like Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne.
Yep. Those are the two that I thought would show up.
Are these your favorites?
I did think of those too.
I think they have stood the test of time, so that they are still great gateway games.
They're still getting people into the hobby.
Here's the thing about Ticket to Ride that showed up on our doorstep. The 15th anniversary Europe.
Wow.
That means that
15 years.
Yeah, but that means the America has been out longer than that. So the USA map.
Yeah,
so
I guess that makes sense.
So Ticket to Ride has been a classic. Long time.
Yeah, and they even have the shorter games now, London, New York, Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. So now you can play Ticket to Ride in about 15 to 20 minutes. There's fewer rules.
Very approachable then.
That is something that you can very quickly get someone into that game, and it goes quickly. So they're like, let's play it again. Now I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
One game that falls into the category that we were talking about earlier about games that people are familiar with but is new is the game 13 Clues. Yeah. That's one that I enjoy teaching people a lot because I always tell them, like, if you like the game Clue, this is it, but way better because you don't have to roll the dice 19 times to get to the hall. It's just the, you know, deciphering and figuring out the puzzle and asking people questions. And it has some neat little setup with your privacy shields and everything going on. One of the things I like about a good gateway game is the ability to pull it out of the box and set it up really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
13 Clues does take a little bit of time to like shuffle all the pieces, make sure that everybody inserts it onto the right side of their board without peeking.
So inside
like,
and outside.
Right. So other than that, the gameplay to it is perfect, I think, for gateway stuff.
Ryan, you have one more?
Yeah. My third one, I did want to mention King of Tokyo. I've played it with like 5-year-olds, and they've actually done really well. You just basically you have to tell them this is your strategy. Do you want to do this or this? And all they have to do is roll, and you tell them what happens. But my third game was Splendor, so I think it's pretty easy to set up, and it's fairly basic, but it gets them into
engine building.
Yeah, engine building and learning that concept, and then you can go from there to something that's more complicated to set up, like
Dominion,
Seven Wonders, or Dominion. Yeah,
I did think of Dominion because that was hugely popular when I was in school.
Sarah has one more.
Another simple game is Sushi Go.
That's
one that introduces the drafting mechanic, because I don't think I ever had any games growing up where you passed cards around drafting.
My last one is Azul,
and
I would say a lot of things that are cool to introduce that to people are, number one, it's bright and colorful, the tiles are tactile, they feel cool, as you're getting, touching them and feeling them, and even the gameplay is fairly simple. There's definitely lots of strategy going on, but it's basically take a group of tiles and put them on your board. I mean, it's not that complicated unless you're playing with Katie's friend. So
she may come up a lot.
We need a nickname for her at least. I agree with that one. I think that's one of those games where you finish it and then you're immediately like, oh, okay, now I understand. I got to play it one more time.
And they have two other versions, and I really like the Summer Pavilion, like for a step up. So
one that is on my list that is not the typical answer for a gateway game is Project L. That one is a very simple, you're laying these very cool tactile pieces
similar to Azul,
but it's not one that's always mentioned on lists, but we've played it with
a
lot of...
that's a pretty new one, though.
Yeah,
it's new and probably not as widely available.
Probably not, but if you can find it, it's beautiful.
It's a cool one.
Yeah. One, I wouldn't say that this personally is a favorite game of mine, but it fits
the... Oh, I know what you're going to do. Oh, don't say it.
No, it fits the...
Don't say it.
Every time you say that, I lose my train of thought. I can't speak with you in my ear. King Domino, because it's playing off of dominoes, and it's very simple. I don't know which one you were afraid I was going to say.
It is one of my favorites.
I do like King Domino a lot.
My game has been played a lot.
King Domino's a good one.
Were you upset she was going to say it because you are upset she doesn't like it that much?
No, there's a game that we haven't said, and I'm not going to say it, so I'll say after the podcast is
okay.
Stick around after the podcast. Excellent. Well, that is a great wrap-up of games. If there are games that you are thinking of that you're like, man, I can't believe they missed this one, let us know. We always love to hear from you guys. You can hit us up on Facebook or send an email to kevin@tantrouse.com. Let him know which games he missed and guess which one he was talking about.
Yeah, go for it.
It probably won't be at the end of the show. Don't listen to the end. It'll be a waste of your time.
Okay.
Thank you guys so much for coming out, listening, and having fun. Play some Gateway Games.
See you in 2 weeks.
Alrighty.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
I know that you're listening here to...
Why did they listen?
...figure out what game I was talking about, and Katie thought it was going to be...
I thought it was going to be Catan.
But it is not Catan. I'm fine with Catan, and I thank you all for listening this far, and the game that I think I'm not going to mention is...
So
That's
mean.
Horrible, Kevin! That's horrible!
Perfect! I love it! Best ending ever!